Welcome back to the Coming of Cage podcast, your Nicolas Cage movie review podcast, home of the Wheel O' Cage, Cage O' Meter, and Cage O' Bingo. This is episode 42 of the show, and we're talking Nicolas Cage's, I mean Nicolas Coppola's, very first screen credit, 1982's Fast Times at Ridgemont High. The film stars Sean Penn, Jennifer Jason Leigh, Judge Reinhold, Phoebe Cates, Forrest Whitaker, and of course, Nicolas Cage. Thank you for joining us. Let's hit it. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Coming of Cage podcast, your Nicolas Cage movie review podcast. I am Derek. That's Ryan.
It is. What's up?
What's up? We're here to talk about another Nicolas Cage movie, but not just any Nicolas Cage movie. His first ever credited paid role under the name Nicolas Coppola, Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Yeah, this is the one that made him change his name from Coppola to Cage.
That's right.
We were just talking about whether we're going to do a movie that has like a no speaking cameo for Nick Cage in it in the future. And this movie is kind of like that. But I think the difference is that this movie is really important in terms of his career. Mm-hmm. Whereas the other one that we're discussing is not. So, but right. Yeah, this one, he's barely in it. He has zero lines. He's just a background character.
Yeah, he's credited as Brad's bud. He doesn't even have his own name.
Yeah.
You know. But yeah, 1982 film directed by Amy Heckerling, apologies, who also directed Clueless and an episode of The Office. So there you go there. It stars Sean Penn, who we saw in Racing with the Moon.
It's a little weird that he's the top credit for it because he was not the main character of the movie.
But he's supposed to be. Like, the poster is him.
Oh, weird.
Yeah, like, he's the big guy here. In fact, they liked him so much that they went back in after production had wrapped and filmed more stuff with him. So now, so Judge Reinhold is also in it. He's arguably the other lead.
Yeah.
As Brad. And then Jennifer Jason Leigh, she plays Stacy, and she's the other person kind of in the mix with the most screen time.
This is an important movie, too, because in my life, I've never seen it. Have you seen it before?
No.
But this is a movie that, we're kind of movie buffs. I think both of us would consider ourselves that. And, you can't go to a movie conversation, it seems like, without this movie coming up at some point. Or, this is a popular movie for a lot of people. And I'm sure we'll talk about some of that. But, it's kind of crazy that for both of us, this is our first time seeing this movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's on the lists of like top 50. It was number two on the list of top 50 high school movies. I don't know that I agree with that, but it is. Yeah, it's a widely known film. Forrest Whitaker is in the movie. It was his first audition ever, and he got the role. Obviously, Eric Stoltz is in it. So there's a lot. Several of these actors went on to win Academy Awards later in their careers, of course. Mm-hmm. But this movie actually wasn't supposed to tank. It was meant to bomb. They thought it was going to go a limited release in like California and then straight to cable. And obviously that is not what happened.
Right.
So there you go. So Fast Times at Ridgemont High is about a group of Southern California high school students are enjoying their most important subjects, sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
Yeah, and I don't know that that's an apt description, but
it's not.
We do run into that a lot with IMDb. It seems like it's kind of a shot in the dark whether the IMDb description will be any good.
Agreed.
All right, so every episode or every movie we watch, I go through and try and take notes and kind of log the things I want to talk about later. And this movie was no exception. So my first note was the opening of this movie was the most 80s opening of any movie ever. It's a shopping mall, like an 80s shopping mall, which is a shopping mall alone is a very 80s thing. They barely exist anymore. But, you see movies like or shows like Stranger Things or lots of 80s movies. The mall is the prominent thing, that sells the 80s. You get all the 80s signs, the 80s stores, the 80s uniforms. Obviously, this actually was filmed in the 80s, so, it wasn't like a retro thing. But, it was the most 80s intro ever And I feel like a lot of other movies have kind of copied it without me knowing, because I had never seen this. But yeah, you see the typical guy at the arcade, you see the people at the like pretzel shop, or like mm-hmm. you know, all these, the movie theater, you know, it's just,
yeah, this mall had everything.
Extremely, yeah, very 80s.
Yeah, it certainly sets the tone for the decade that it's in. There's no question about it.
For sure, but it didn't really need to, because it came out in 1982, so it's not like these people were like, oh, we're time traveling into 1980, you know what I mean? Like, we get it, it's the 80s. The movie came out at that point, so...
I mean, the music was good. There's good music.
I do have that as a note later, is that the soundtrack was really good, yeah. But yeah, in this intro, we see just... who we find out later is the main character of the movie, but at this point, it's just a shirtless guy hanging out of the arcade, as you do, you know? Who didn't do that in the 80s? I mean,
it's so weird seeing this now, because like I've watched Sean Penn in like his really serious roles, some of his heavy roles, right? And now I'm watching him in Racing to the Moon and this. You know, and it's just like,
and he was good in this. It's just a very different role than what I'm used to seeing, and I'm actually somewhat convinced that he was really high for most of this movie, because some of that stuff is hard to fake.
So, according to the trivia, they were at least really smoking pot in the van scenes.
Yeah, because, I mean, the glassy eyes and things like that, you can only do so much, you know, to fake that. So, anyway, also in this intro, we get, like, this is a very horny movie. I have that note later, but it starts you off early, like in this montage at the beginning at the mall. It literally is just like a camera panning down a line of butts.
Yep, butts and jeans.
And this, you know, at this point, it's not an uncomfortable thing, but something that we'll talk about as the movie gets going is that some of these characters that we're introduced to are supposed to be 15 years old, 16 years old, and it's showing topless and bottomless scenes with these characters. And so I, you know, had a hard time figuring out what exactly the director wanted the people watching this to feel when they saw what's supposed to be a 15-year-old's breasts. You know what I mean? Like, was it supposed to be sexy?
So according to Amy Heckerling, it was supposed to be uncomfortable.
Okay.
So that's what she was going for. She wanted it to be uncomfortable.
Well, we're 40 years past the movie's release date now, and seeing like the Phoebe Cates scene, that's, you know, everybody has seen whether they've seen this movie or not. It's kind of an iconic movie scene. I don't think that scene makes most people uncomfortable when they see it, especially out of context.
Right. I mean, especially like when you know, like, these actors are of age, these are adults.
They're, right. They're obviously they're not
high school kids. Filming. Right. Yeah,
it's just a weird thing. Anyway,
it totally is.
My next note is Judge Reinhold is so young in this movie.
Yeah,
he's great though. He looks great. It's fun to see him at this age, and he was great in the movie. Like, he's just a good actor, and I like seeing him. And you know, he has worked with Nicolas Cage at least one other time that we've seen.
In another very horny film.
Yeah, another very horny film, an uncomfortable film, Zondelay, or however you say it. But
yeah,
you know, if you haven't. And
fun fact here, Nick was supposed to have the role of Brad.
Nick, he auditioned for it, right?
Well, so he kind of had the role, but they found out he was lying about his age. Nick was actually 17. He was not 18. And there are very strict laws about minors and what they can't, when the hours in which they can film and things like that. And they had to reduce the size of his role once they found out that he was a minor. And so Brad went to Judge Reinhold.
Well, I can't say that Nick would have been any better. I mean, Judge Reinhold was great. So,
oh yeah, no, I agree.
So yeah, the shirtless guy that we saw in the arcade, we see him go to this restaurant where Judge Reinhold is working. I think this is the same one he's working at. Mm-hmm. And he just comes in with a shirt on, takes off his shirt, and then starts smoking.
This is so funny.
If you didn't live in the 80s, it was kind of a Wild West time. Like, this stuff that's happening in the movie is not, like, just crazy things for the movie. It was a really weird time. I mean, it didn't seem weird at the time, but looking back at it, it is a little weird. So, you know, smoking in restaurants wherever you want, you know, things like that. I'm glad they're gone now, but, you know, yeah, it was weird. And then he gets told to put his shirt back on. We can't have shirtless people in the restaurant. So
well, because that's Judge Reinhold. He's like, well, you had a shirt on when you came in here, so put it back on.
Right. And then we get our first glimpse at the cage himself. We see
very briefly.
Yeah, see him slap an "I am a homo" sticker on the back of a guy's shirt. So that's fun.
Yeah. Yeah,
there's a casual homophobia, which we marked off as casual racism on our bingo card because we've talked about that before.
Yeah, I should probably just swap out the word for like
or we could just use. Oh yeah, yeah, casual prejudice would be good, or just put racism / homophobia.
Yeah,
but I guess it could also be like religious stuff, or you know, there's a lot of things that could fall under prejudice. Yeah,
it's not good, I'll tell you that.
No, but that's just the first of several.
Yeah.
It did make me a little embarrassed for that to be, you know, Nick's
debut
in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Then we get to see a young Forrest Whitaker.
So young, man. Yeah. This is the youngest I've ever seen him. I mean, obviously it's his first role, but like there must be like a 20-year gap between the next time I saw him again.
Yeah. And, something I found interesting in this movie is they do a really good job with cars, making the cars like fit the characters. I really enjoyed that part of it. There's this kind of a skeezy guy that sells concert tickets, like scalps concert tickets, and you know, he drives like an AMC Gremlin. You know, another character drives a 240Z, and then another character drives Forrest Whitaker drives like a brand new Trans Am, brand new 1982.
It's gorgeous too.
Yeah. So a lot of movies don't do well with that. They just use whatever. Nowadays, it's just like whatever company sponsored you. You use the Toyotas or the, you know, Chevys. But, you know, back then they were using cars to try and fit the characters just like the wardrobe would. And I think that they did a good job with that in this movie. I really enjoyed that part. It also made it really easy to identify like who's driving or like whose car it is if somebody else is driving. Does happen later.
Yeah.
But yeah, then I have another note that says Nick background character, which I think is on our bingo cards sometimes. I don't think we had it on this one.
Not this time, I don't think.
But yeah, it's always interesting when he's a background character, and he definitely is in this one. We get a scene in this cafeteria. So at this point, the movie, like, we have no idea what the actual story of the movie is. You don't really kind of figure out what the storylines of the movie are until like halfway through. So I'm not really going scene by scene with everything that's happening, because at this point, I had no idea what the plot was supposed to be.
I'd argue this has a very thin plot.
Once you figure it out, I'd agree with that. It wouldn't be an argument. But we have two characters. We have Phoebe Cates and we have Stacy.
Yeah, Jennifer Jason Leigh.
Yeah. They're both very young in this. But they're having a discussion in the cafeteria. We got introduced to them earlier because they work together at a food place at the mall.
They work now at the pizza place.
Now we're having a conversation with them at the school where they're eating lunch together. And I thought it was really funny. They were talking about how they had three girls at the school that are doing the Pat Benatar look. And they had like three different Pat Benatar looks. Because I'm sure that was a real thing. I wasn't really in school for much of the 80s. I certainly wasn't in high school. So, you know, I don't know if that was a thing. But it's funny because people still do that now. But you don't really think about it, you know, in the 80s, people doing these rock star looks. If you can call Pat Benatar a rock star, I don't know. There's some debate on that.
I think that counts.
Yeah. So also during this scene, Stacy expresses her hesitation with sexual encounters. And she's asking her friend about giving a blowjob. To which they both demonstrate on carrots that they have in front of them, much to the chagrin of the men a table over that are hooting and hollering and watching.
Yeah.
They also bite the tip off at one point. I'm like, okay, we're good.
I was a little surprised, like, learning after the fact that this movie was intended to go like straight to cable. I would have really liked to have seen what the TNT version of this movie is.
I mean, they could still do all that. They just
can they? I don't know.
I probably in 1982, there wasn't even an R or like a PG-13 rating back
then.
That's
true. That's a good point.
This is the point when I realized that this is a horny fucking movie, man. Just really horny all the time. Mm-hmm. So then we get start to get introduced to some of the teachers, and one of them is the dude. I know him from Ghost. He was the subway ghost that like teaches the dude how to kick cans and like actually interact with the physical world.
Man, I haven't seen Ghost in like 20 years. Which teacher is this?
The guy, Mr. Vargas. He's a really unique looking guy.
Yeah.
Like, super Vincent, unique looking.
Was it Scavelli?
Yeah, I think so. Scavelli? Yeah.
I forgot he was in Ghost. Yeah.
You forgot he was in Ghost? That's what I know him from.
I mean, I haven't seen it in so long.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I know him from. But yeah, he teaches Patrick Swayze how to, like, you know, manipulate the real world. And he screams and yells at him to get him to do it. That's but funny. He's a great actor. And he's just so unique looking that I just love seeing him pop up in movies. Because, you know, he's just a fun character. And in this one, he's playing, like, a creepy kind of teacher that takes him to the moor and like lets him handle like intestines and stuff. He pulls out a heart out of a cadaver.
He takes him to a hospital. Okay. And then while they're on tour, part of it is in the morgue.
Yeah. It's just a weird thing that I'm pretty sure never actually happened in the 80s, but whatever.
I mean, we certainly did not do that on any of our high school trips.
Well, to be fair, you weren't in the high school in the 80s either, so
no
not even not. You weren't even in the 90s in the high school, so
nope. I'm just a
young buck.
That's right.
But yeah, my next note was good soundtrack, because there's a lot of good songs on this for sure. Underage makeout. So while earlier there was a scene where we had Linda Barrett, Phoebe Cates' character, and Stacy at the pizza joint where they were working, and this apparently really hot guy comes in, and she sends Stacy over to go get his number or whatever, and the guy starts hitting on her and making stupid jokes, so she gets his number, and then we get a scene of them going to like make out point or something like that, which is actually a baseball diamond that has a dugout. That's the least romantic place I've ever seen in my life.
Well, what happens like if another couple heroin decides?
Heroin needles on the ground and like graffiti everywhere, and it's just like concrete slabs.
I was picturing, like, before they show up, I thought it was gonna be like in Greece where they go to like the lookout, you know?
Yeah, exactly. That's the way it is for every like makeout scene in movie. But and they even call it like makeout point or something like that. But it's not a point unless you're talking about the point of the baseball diamond.
No, they just called it the point.
Okay. It's implied that it's something like that. So I assumed that it was going to be like a lookout point, like you're talking about.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was this really terrible, like concrete dungeon dugout, and they start making out, and he's like, "You're really 19, right?" Because she told him that she's 19, but she revealed to the audience that she's 15. Earlier than that. And so they start making out hardcore. And
he's 26, by the way.
He's 26. And, you know, she starts blasting them nips and he starts going to town and they do the deed right on this concrete slab. And it's a scene. That's our first on-screen underage boobies for the movie. Not the last.
I do think it's important to note that in the real world, they were both 20.
Yes, I think that's clear. We did bring that up earlier. It's just uncomfortable to watch because we know that this girl is supposed to be 15. And I don't really know why you want to make somebody uncomfortable during this kind of a movie. Like, I understand her explanation for a specific type of movie, but this movie is not that type of movie.
I don't know. I don't know because like the trivia also talks about it being like a TNA movie, and it's like, well, how are you both?
Right.
Like, I don't know. If it tried to walk that line, I don't know that it was successful.
Yeah. And maybe that happened in the editing room. Like they had a specific tone that they were going for when they directed it. And then it got, you know, butchered up a little bit in the edit, but
always possible.
Then we get Truant Sean Penn. Jeff Spicoli because he shows up to class. So we meet this teacher,
Mr. Hand.
Mr. Hand, that's right. And he is a hard ass teacher, like the typical 80s hard ass teacher. And he locks the doors at the second the clock strikes, you know, whatever starting time is. And he's very adamant that this is my time. You're on my time and you will not be late. You will not eat on my time. You will not do any of these things on my time. And then the first day, Jeff Spicoli, the stoner, shows up late and gets his ticket or some sort of ticket, something ripped up.
I think it was his class schedule.
Okay, ripped up by the teacher, and then he has to go back to the office to go get it replaced. Mm-hmm. And so he's not in the class that day, I guess. Let's see. Treating service workers poorly.
Oh, yeah. Brad gets fired.
So Brad is working at, like, this... He seems like he's a good chef at the for a fast food restaurant. Like, people really enjoy his food. He throws out all the old fries when he gets there and starts making a fresh batch. You know,
he has an employee care about his job. Up on the wall.
Yeah, that's true. He did have that. So yeah, he's a good employee. But one of the other employees says, "Hey, I need to go use the restroom. Will you cover the counter for me for a few minutes?" And so he does. And this customer comes up and just starts treating him really bad. And he gets fired because he threatens to beat the customer's ass or something along those lines.
Yeah.
And yeah. Anytime you're treating service workers poorly like that, I'm not a fan. So
it was very on the nose, right? The dude's in like a 3-piece suit. He's eaten most of his breakfast, but wants his refund. And look, as a guy who myself has worked in food service, you know, fuck you.
Yeah.
I've had that happen to me where like there'd be a bite left on the plate. And be like, I didn't like this. I want a refund. Sure, yeah. Bud. Sure, bud.
So, this is our next drop of casual homophobia. We get like Sean Penn, his character, having like a dream, I guess, where he's winning a surfing championship.
Oh, right.
And he has these two like supermodels next to him and he's being interviewed by somebody.
Yeah.
And he says something like, "That's for f-" or something like that. It's like really inappropriate and not necessary to the movie at all. And it just makes me uncomfortable hearing that word. I didn't even like saying it. But it is what it is. You can bleep it out later if you want. But yeah, the F slur for that people use for homosexuals is what he says. And it's not great. It's obviously bad. And his character doesn't really show, like, just like Nick Cage's character, we get this homophobia. But really, the character is not set up to be a bad character. I guess in the 80s, that's just what people said.
To make matters worse, that whole scene was done later.
That's when they added in.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And so like they were writing stuff. Some of the dialogue, especially in this case, was written like as they were shooting. And so Sean Penn didn't have time to memorize these lines. And so they would actually have cue cards. And supposedly the writer kept this cue card because it's so like infamous or something.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's out of nowhere. I mean,
It's a weird piece of memorabilia to keep, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I get it. As somebody that collects movie props and stuff like that, I mean, I get under, you know, the weird stuff. But yeah, that one's a tough sell, you know? It is what it is. But yeah, that's a weird scene. It doesn't really add anything.
Well, it added more Sean Penn. That was the thing. They wanted
but
more
we don't really
time.
Ever see him surf or do anything. Like, we hear him reference surfing at one point, but I guess he was just supposed to be the typical surfer guy. So surfer stoner guy.
Yep.
So we at somewhere around this point, you start feeling out what the plot maybe is. And the plot is essentially just following like these maybe five characters that are going through their high school. I don't know. They're just going through high school, I guess.
A year of high school. And it's not even for all of them. They're not all seniors. So it's just a year of high school.
Right. So one of them is Sean Penn's character, Stacy, who is the Phoebe Cates' friend, Judge Reinhold.
Who is Stacy's brother, by the way.
Yes. Mike, who we haven't really talked about much because he's kind of a weird character in the movie, and I don't really know what they were going for that, but he's the guy that was like selling scalped concert tickets, and he's a friend to this other guy that we haven't really talked about at all, Rat, which is a weird name. His name is Mark Ratner, so they call him Rat.
Yeah.
But he's kind of the nerd, stereotypical nerdy, like can't talk to girls, you know, that trope from the 80s. And I would argue that basically the main characters that the movie wants you to follow or care about are Jeff Spicoli, Stacy, and Rat. Judge Reinhold's character isn't even like, he's still, in my opinion, just kind of a side character because he doesn't really get a happy ending or, you know, anything like that. You know, we don't really get much with him. Everybody else has more plot development than he does.
That's what's so weird about
Mike. Him and Mike are both that way.
Yeah. So like Stacy and Mark get the plot, but Jeff and Brad get the screen time.
And Mike.
And yeah, Mike gets a good amount of screen time too. And like
gets a major, but those three characters, or those two characters, Judge Reinhold and Robert Reminis, Mike Damone, they are just there to further the plot of the other characters, really.
Right. Yeah.
So yeah, this movie was more about Rat, Spicoli, and Stacy, even like Phoebe Cates' character, which is interesting to me because I thought she was going to be a main, you know, like the movie was going to be about her because I'd seen that one piece of media
that's
famous. So I just assumed this movie was going to be she was going to be a big part of it. But she's just there to move along Stacy's story.
Well, she's like, you know, she's supposed to be more like mature and worldly. Her boyfriend's already like up in Chicago and
she's already had sex so many times.
And she's so much more knowledgeable. And clearly like at the beginning of the movie, we're not sure. Maybe that's true. Right. But as the movie goes on, you start to realize she's kind of full of it.
Yeah.
You know?
So Rat, he is, like I said, the stereotypical nerdy guy that doesn't know how to talk to girls, but we're kind of introduced to him in the beginning of the movie. He's like a usher at a movie theater, like a ticket taker at a movie theater
in the mall.
And the restaurant or the food court or whatever where the girls work is not like he can see it from where he's working. Mm-hmm. And so he's got eyes on Stacy. And he also has a science class with her. So he has a crush on her. And that relationship is kind of the main part of the movie. And it sounds like that's what the plot was supposed to be. The Spicoli stuff was fleshed out later because they liked Sean Penn.
Right.
But we finally get a date between the two, between Rat and Stacy. And they go out and it is like the most awkward date ever.
They go to like, I don't know, like a Hungarian,
it's like a 4-star restaurant.
German restaurant. You know, and he forgets his wallet, poor guy.
Yeah.
And that's where Mike steps up. Mike brings him the wallet. Gives him a hard time about it, but he does it.
Yeah. Yeah. Mike is really like his best friend essentially, but he's kind of a dirtbag. Like I said, he's scalping tickets.
He's a slime
doing
ball.
Things that are not great. He does some stuff later in the movie that's not great. But yeah, he does help his friend out in this case. And, you know, we get this awkward date and it goes, she's now seasoned. She's had sex with this 26-year-old guy. And, you know, her friend, Phoebe Cates' character, told her that it hurts. She said it hurts so much. And Phoebe Cates' character tells her, yeah, but it gets way better. You got to do it more. And it gets way better. And so now she's trying to do it more. And she brings Brat into her home while her brother is at work or out or something and her parents are out of town. And she is like laying it on thick, real thick. Like this guy is completely oblivious or he knows and he's just not comfortable with what's happening. But she goes and like has to change as soon as she gets there. She comes out in a robe and says, you want to come into my bedroom? And she's like, well, what do you want to do when he sits down on the bed? And she's like, oh, let's look at this photo album. And so they start looking at this photo album. They look at like three pictures and then they start making out. And she's like ready to get to the next stage. And he's like, I'm sorry, I got to go. And he like runs out, you know, he's borrowing his sister's car and like he's got to get the car back and blah, blah, blah. So he's clearly uncomfortable with the situation.
Mm-hmm.
And so this, we were referencing this next scene earlier because we see a scene of the Trans Am, of Forrest Whitaker's character's Trans Am, out driving. And it's not him driving. It's Sean Penn's character driving while he's drinking and high.
And it should be noted that Forrest Whitaker's got a little brother, and his brother and Sean Penn's character are friends.
Yes, and that's Forrest Whitaker's character is away at football camp or something. And so they take this car, and he's driving like an absolute maniac.
Insane.
Yeah, if I saw somebody driving like this in real life, I would be instantly calling the police because there's something wrong with this person. And there was in the movie. I mean, he was drinking and high.
I would have liked to have seen how they filmed this, given that it was 1982 and they probably didn't have like a huge budget. I would have liked to have seen how they did it.
They probably put gas in the car and then turned it on and had some other cars driving around and just...
Well, because like they had to have probably like some stunt drivers, you know, because like,
probably
he's going down the middle of two lanes and he does bump another car, but no one like spins out or anything. So like it just would have been interesting.
And he does wreck it, but it's funny because
yeah,
when he wrecks it, like you were talking about the budget, all we see is like a bunch of styrofoam rocks on the hood, and the car like seemingly has no damage that you can really see, but. Yeah, I thought now that you've mentioned the budget, it's funny. We've seen that in some other Nick Cage movies where the budget was low and so they couldn't actually wreck the car.
Right.
The Celica comes to mind from the testicle exploding movie.
Yeah, I mean, the budget was estimated at $4.5 million was the estimated budget.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, I just thought that was funny.
Yeah, no,
like,
totally.
He's like, it is. I think this is kind of a famous scene too with Sean Penn's character, where he's like, "My dad's a TV repairman. He's got every tool you can imagine. He can fix this car."
He's like, "I can fix it." He's like, "I can fix it." And the kid's like, "No, you can't."
And he looks outside and he's like, "Oh, maybe I can't." And it's pretty funny.
Oh my god! But this leads to the smartest thing he does in the entire movie.
Yeah, that's true. That is pretty smart. He frames, so there's this big rivalry football game coming up. And so he, I guess, has the wrecked car towed to the school and spray painted all over it that it was the other team that did this to this guy's car. And since he's like their star player, you know, he comes out and sees it and he's pissed off and they get away with it. Nobody ever finds out.
It was brilliant. It really was.
It really was, yeah. But then we get a scene of the football game with this the poor other team nothing to do with it, and Forrest Whitaker is ripping them apart limb from limb, slinging them into the air, like diving over people and putting his full body weight into shoulder checks. You know, it's a crazy montage. It ends up being like 48-0 or something for the score, just because it's implied that Forrest Whitaker's character is like a beast on the field.
Well, he's a bigger dude, you know, and it's high school, so he's clearly like towering over people because he's actually like 21. But
yeah,
it was a nice little sequence, very different from the rest of the movie. It kind of takes you out of it a little bit. Again, like there's some disjointed aspects,
right?
You know,
I feel like at this point we should probably say that even though this girl has gone on the date with Rat, she's clearly been horny for every guy that's around her all the time, including Rat's friend Mike, the scumbag.
Well, it's weird. I don't know if it's that or if she's just been convinced by her friend, you know, Linda, Phoebe Cates' character, that like this is just what you're supposed to do as a high school girl.
Maybe, but she's got she's giving bedroom eyes to every guy that's near her, basically, other than her brother.
Yeah, I think Linda's just been a bad influence.
Maybe, but we at this point we get the famous Phoebe Cates pool scene. You know, they're Mike and Rat go over to the house, Judd Reinhold's and Jennifer Jason Leigh's character's house, because they have a pool. Mm-hmm. And so it's just the four of them there, and then Judge Reinhold comes home at some point, but they're getting ready to jump in the pool, and Judge Reinhold's character comes home and sees Phoebe Cates' character in a red bikini and walks inside and starts furiously masturbating. And having that scene that everybody that's so famous in this movie is not even a re- like it's an imagine it's his imagination as to what's happening outside. Because he does like stare at her out the window a little bit, but then he like sits down and starts doing it, doing the deed. So now he's imagining it. And that scene is his imagination. But she ends up getting out of the pool. And not nearly what like he was a his, he was imagining, but just getting out of the pool, and she needs to go inside to get a towel or something. So she goes inside, and he didn't lock the door, and she didn't knock, and so she just opens the door, and he's just like full on, you know, doing the thing, and she's like, oh my god, oh my god, and she like runs out.
I thought that was gonna go somewhere. Like I thought that was gonna come back later in the movie, but no.
It did not. Yeah, I feel like that was a cut plot point or just meant to be funny. But yeah, there's really no repercussions for anything in this movie except for one thing that we're about to get to.
Well, but like at this point, I feel really bad for Brad because he got fired and then he gets this job at like this pirate fish place and has to wear this uniform that he hates. Right. And he ends up quitting that job after feeling like humiliated. So he's clearly depressed. There's this mention about how like he's barely talking now and stuff like that. Right. And then Linda walks in on him.
Yeah, he can't even pound one out and feel better, you know? He's got to just get interrupted. Nothing is going his way.
Nothing. And he seems like a good enough guy, whereas, like, Jeff is, like,
seems like the only really good, well, maybe not the only, but one of very few really good guys in this movie.
Yeah.
You know, Rat is a pretty good guy, too. But Agreed. Other than that, everybody else is kind of a piece of shit.
Pretty much.
So, I can't remember exactly how it happens, but eventually we get to where Mike goes over to her house, to Stacy's house to swim or something.
They're walking home from school. They're walking home from school.
Oh, that's right. And she says she needs a ride.
Place. Yeah. And she invites him in for iced tea.
Yeah. Yeah. And so then she's like, you want to take a swim? And so he's like, well, sure, but I don't have any trunks. She's like, oh, you can borrow Brad's. And so she goes and puts on her bathing suit or whatever. Or no, she goes and grabs her bathing suit.
No, she puts it on, and then she takes him to, they have like a changing house outside by the pool,
right,
where the trunks are.
And she takes him out there, and she's like, go ahead and get changed. Here's some trunks. And he's like, only if you take yours off too. And so they both get topless. And then they both get bottomless, and we get hanging dong with full bush in this movie.
Not the version I saw.
Really?
Yeah.
You didn't see the dong?
I streamed it on, what did I stream it on? Peacock?
Gotcha. So I was streaming it from, or not streaming it, I was watching it from a 4K recent re-release.
Oh.
Criterion. Okay. A Criterion re-release.
This must have been like an uncut version.
It was uncut, I'll tell you that.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, it showed full dong. And I was like, holy shit, I did not expect that in this movie. I mean, it was the 80s. So, you know, there's some dongs in the 80s, but not many.
Not many.
I mean, it's mostly just female nudity in the 80s because they thought nobody wanted to see penis. And so, but yeah, there was full on bush and dong. I'm sad now that you missed out on that scene.
I didn't see that. Yeah,
it happened. That is interesting that we watched two different versions, but full on hanging dong. And okay. You know, she takes her pants off too, but you don't really see anything. So
yeah,
but you do see dick. So
bummer.
Not erect, if you were curious.
Well, no, you can't. So if it's erect, then you can't
X-rated.
X-rated, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah, it was a flaccid penis.
So
then we get Judge Reinhold. Are they have sex? They make love.
Mike and Stacy.
Mike and Stacy, not Judge Reinhold. He was probably masturbating somewhere.
Aww.
But yeah, they have sex. Even though this is the chick that his like best friend was into, he still does it, and he's over. They make it a point. Maybe this was, I don't know if this was in your part, but they make it a point to show that he takes like three pumps and is done.
Oh yeah, the rest of the scene I think is there.
Yeah, he's and then he like immediately runs out. He's like, I gotta go, and he just goes while he's still putting his pants and stuff on.
Well, because the scene shatters him too, because we see that like he's been full of it the whole time.
Yeah, he's like the suave guy telling his friend how to get women and stuff like that, and then he like gets three pumps in and it's done.
Well, like the way it comes off is that like he's never had sex before.
Oh, see, I didn't get that vibe. I just got the vibe that he was quick.
Well, he straight up says that, like, I think I came.
I mean, he does say that, but...
That's a weird thing to be unsure about.
I mean, even if you've never had sex, that's a weird thing to be unsure about. You know what I mean? I feel like guys figure that out pretty quick.
I mean, that's fair.
So we go to Judge Reinhold's character, who is now working at this pirate-themed restaurant. And, he has to make a delivery. Like, it's an obscene costume. It's like a t-shirt that's made to look like a pirate shirt. And like, he's got to wear this huge, like, styrofoam hat.
So bad. Yeah.
And he's got to make this delivery, and it's got to be there in an hour or whatever. And so he starts eating the customer's food, which is kind of an asshole move. You know, we said he was a good guy, but that's kind of a dick move.
I think he's kind of reaching his limit, I think, at this point.
Yeah, and eventually he sees, like, this hot chick looking at him in another, like, Trans Am or Camaro or something like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's looking like she's interested, but then she's kind of laughing at him because of the outfit. And he's kind of flirting back, forgetting that he has this outfit on. And then he looks in the mirror and realizes that he's still wearing this goofy-ass hat. And he throws it out the window, and then he starts throwing out all the food. And I'm assuming he quits at that point.
I imagine.
Yeah. And so this is where, like, time starts getting really weird. Well, it's been weird throughout the movie. It's not really clear, like, how much time has passed. But then we get a scene without... It doesn't say, like, 3 months later or anything like that. But we get a scene with her telling Mike... With Stacey telling Mike that she's pregnant. And so...
Well, I think it's only been... I think they do say it's been 3 weeks.
When do they say that?
Later. A couple of scenes later.
Okay, but I'm saying when this scene happens...
Yeah.
We have no idea. She just goes and tells him that she's pregnant. And so we're just assuming that it's been like 4 weeks or something like that. And he wants her to get an abortion, right? And she's already looked into it. And it's going to cost $300, I think.
$150.
Oh, $150. And I thought it was $150 each. Okay. And she wants him to pay half. And she wants him to drive her. Which seems totally reasonable in that circumstance. And so he agrees. And so we get a scene of him, like, calling a bunch of people at night trying to get the money together. Because implied that he's got money because he's, like, selling all these tickets and everything constantly. But then we find out that he really doesn't have money.
Well, because people aren't paying him.
Right. He's just giving them product without them paying.
Yeah.
And so he's trying to collect and nobody wants to pay him. And then, you know, we get another scene with her, like, waiting, clearly waiting for him to come pick her up that at probably an agreed upon time. And he doesn't show up.
Mm-hmm.
And she tries to call him, and his mom or somebody says that he's working with his dad in the basement and he's busy and he'll call you later or something like that. So she asks her brother for a ride to the bowling alley, which apparently is across the street from the abortion clinic.
Yeah.
And so her brother drops her off at the bowling alley and she pretends to run in. But then as soon as he gets away, she runs across the street to the abortion clinic and he looks in the rearview mirror and sees her. And he's a very good brother in this circumstance. He goes and waits for her to come out. And, you know, she does. And they're like, oh, we can't let you go if you don't have a ride. And she said, oh, well, they said they'd meet me downstairs. And so they let her go. And she doesn't really have a ride downstairs.
Yeah, I feel like that was just way too easy.
Yeah, yeah. It was the 80s. I mean, things were different.
Yeah.
But yeah, she didn't think she had a ride. She was expecting to just walk home after getting an abortion, which sounds like fucking terrible. You know, she didn't... I expected her character to be a little more traumatized, but she wasn't really, which... You know, I thought maybe the movie was going to take a stance on something, but... It didn't really.
It doesn't, no.
She seems fairly normal after this happens, although she's thankful that her brother is there.
No, I mean,
she asked him to not tell her parents.
Right. I mean, at the end of the day, this thing really is just framed more to make Mike seem like an asshole than
Yeah.
anything else.
And so she ends up telling her friend, Phoebe Cates' character, about this. And I know you said that Phoebe Cates' character was a bad influence on her, but also Phoebe Cates' character was a very good friend to her and was trying to look out for her.
Oh, sure.
So she calls him like a dirt bag or scumbag or
Prick.
something like
A
that.
little
Oh,
prick.
a little prick. Yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah.
And which I've been calling him a scumbag the whole time. But yeah, a little prick. And so she goes and like spray paints his AMC Gremlin with a little prick, and she writes it on his
His locker.
locker. And yeah, I mean, this is something that if something like this happened to me and my friends were going to avenge me, that's great. They did a good job with that. But yeah, he like puts a piece of cardboard with some duct tape over the door to like cover where she wrote that. And yeah, so she was as bad of a influence as she may be, she's a very good friend and does genuinely care about her friend. So
Yes.
yeah, my next note was AMC Gremlin, because I liked that car and it was green, which was cool.
Very green.
So then Mike finds out, or Rat finds out, that Mike slept with her, his
With
love
Stacy,
interest,
yeah.
and got her pregnant and all this stuff that happened. And they're in like a locker room and they're about to fight. And the coach or whoever comes in and says, "Oh, you guys take it somewhere else," or whatever. So it's kind of a, we have the one that's demonstrated that they're a very good friend, and then we have this one that's demonstrated they're a really bad friend. So we get to see both extremes of friendships in this movie in close proximity. Yeah, and so then we get the scene where the science class is touring the morgue, or touring the hospital, and going to the morgue, and literally like this teacher pulls out a heart, and points out, like, I thought it was just gonna be okay, because there were some rumors that the kids were talking about earlier in the movie where they were like, "I heard he pulled all the intestines out of this corpse and blah 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 blah," and they're talking about this teacher, and they're like, "I heard this and I heard that." And I, when they get to the morgue, he's like pointing out, "Well, here's the lungs and here's this." And then he literally does. I thought it was just going to be that and that the kids were making stuff up, but he reaches inside the corpse and pulls out like the heart, and just like it's already cut, like it's free floating in there. And he's
Yeah.
just like showing it to the kids. And Stacy runs out, like getting ready to vomit. And Mike or Mark chases after, Rat chases after her. And they kind of reconnect at this point. She's kind of been, screwed over by two guys, and she's starting to realize that she doesn't want just sex, she wants a relationship. And she's starting to figure that out. And we get this really weird scene, and this might have been one of the added on scenes. Oh, there's a dance happening right that night. But
The graduation
the
dance
graduation
that
dance, but
everybody's invited to.
Mr. Hand shows up to Spicoli's
Okay.
house, and this might have been an added on scene to get more Spicoli, I don't know. But he shows up to Spicoli's house, which apparently is a thing that teachers do in movies. And he said that Spicoli had been wa had wasted 8 hours of his time in class, and so now he's gonna get that back. And he's gonna go over this book with Spicoli, and so they, spend an undetermined amount of time together going over this book.
This is so awkward too, because I think it's also worth noting that his walls are just covered in pictures of naked women,
Oh
like
yeah,
centerfold
boobs
cutouts and
everywhere.
stuff like that, right? Just like
And
everywhere.
his little brother has come into this room, is like probably 8 years old, has come in several times. So
Yeah.
clearly, this house is bad, has some bad influence stuff going on
And
for a
Mr.
young
Hand's
kid.
just chilling there,
Yeah, he's just chilling with
unfazed.
these titties all over the place around him. But yeah, so he lets him go to the dance, even though he could have kept him longer, but he lets him go to the dance. And they have this happy ending, those two do, because they've been at each other the whole movie. And so yeah, they go to the dance, and we get Nick Cage dances in the background. I was watching the whole time. I wasn't even paying attention to the dance. I was like, "We're gonna get this box on our bingo card. He's somewhere in here dancing." And sure enough, you do get to see him for like 2 seconds, dancing in the background of some shot.
Well, good. I missed it. So there you go.
Did you really?
I did.
Yeah, he was wearing a black and white striped suit. We had to rewind it to make sure it was him, because the person I was watching with thought she saw him, and I was like, I missed it. And so I was watching, and yeah, there he was. Just kind of, you know, doing his Nick thing back there. He wasn't doing like any crazy dance or anything, just kind of trying to blend in. But yeah, and so it ends up with Rat and Stacy in a relationship, and we get like I have coffee assault as my last note.
Yeah, so Brad gets a job at a gas station convenience store. And it's late. He's the only one there. And our buddy Jeff comes in, and he's buying, like, I don't know, some type of drink and some like tasty cakes or whatever, and goes to use the bathroom. And while he's in the bathroom, the place is getting robbed. And Brad's like, he's super nervous. He doesn't really know how to open the safe, right? Because like he had just started it and whatever. And when Jeff comes back in and it distracts the robber, Brad knocks the dude out with the hot coffee.
Well, he throws the hot coffee in his face, and the guy goes down on the ground. And he's like clutching his face.
It's great.
Yeah, it's pretty great. But then it starts in the actual ending, which is like it gives an update for each character and
classic.
What happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, I don't really get the hype for the movie. I guess some people just like the characters, or they grew up with this movie maybe, but watching it 40 years after it was released, I didn't really see anything that would make me put this anywhere near the top 10 of, like, I don't know. Maybe in the top 10 of high school movies, but definitely not like in the top 5.
Well, that's the problem. I don't know that I could name 10 high school movies. You know what I mean?
There's a lot.
Yeah, like, I'd have to think about it. Like, you know, but I guess it depends, you know, just any movie that takes place in a high school. No, I didn't. I mean, there was a few redeeming qualities in this movie. There's a few scenes that made me laugh, right? There's a few touching moments or whatever. I really like Judge Reinhold throughout the movie, quite a bit, actually, you know. And I guess I liked the music. That was really what it had going for it.
Yeah. There wasn't like any messages in the movie that the audience is supposed to get, like, except maybe sex is bad.
I guess.
But yeah, even that's a bit of a stretch. I don't know.
Right? Like, it's just, there's not a whole lot going on. Yeah.
Think it was interesting that in 1982 that abortion was dealt with so casually. Like, I would have thought in 1982 that would have been, like, especially considering, not to get political, but the current climate, you know, abortion is a pretty hot topic right now, with very extreme people on both sides. And in 1982, apparently it was more accepted.
Yeah, I mean, she's a minor, right? She's 15.
Yeah.
You know, so I was a little surprised that there didn't need to be like parental consent or anything.
And also,
like that.
The way the movie handles it is just very casual.
Yeah.
Like, this is just something high school people do. You know, it's no more serious than anything else that happens in the movie, the wreck or anything like that, you know? So
I do wonder how Stacy paid for it, because she had to shell out the full $150.
She works. Maybe she's just good with her money.
You're right. She doesn't really have a car. So yeah, maybe she's just careful with her money. That's fair. That's a good point.
Yeah. So that's pretty much the movie. I'm sure we're going to get roasted if people listen to this and go, how did you not like this movie? And it's like, it's not that I didn't like it. It's just, I don't really get the hype for it.
No, it's not my scene really. I don't really connect with any of these characters on any significant level at all. One little fun fact. Jennifer Jason Leigh, who plays Stacy, the pizza shop that her and Phoebe Cates' characters work in, between getting the role and filming starting, Jennifer actually worked in that pizza shop.
Nice.
So that's kind of fun.
Yeah.
But that's it. That's the movie. So now we got to, of course, rate the film. We rate our movies on our cage-o-meter. We do overall quality and then overall caginess, 0 low, 20 high. I mean, caginess, like, you know, he's in 3, maybe 4 shots. I hesitate to even say full scenes. He has zero dialogue. In multiple cases, like, you could miss him very easily in those scenes.
I mean, he wasn't even Cage in this movie, so Cage's got to be like a 1 or a 0. It's because there's nothing.
Right. Like, I was going to say, like, if 0 is an option, I think this is just a 0.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's easy then. So zero on caginess, that is. Now, overall quality, like, it's fine. It's
compared to the other movies that we reviewed of his from the 80s, like early 80s, I feel like this was more enjoyable. You know, you had, like Cotton Club and
Racing with the Moon.
Racing with the Moon, yeah.
You know, like, I mean, Moonstruck was only shortly after this.
Well, that was like 87, wasn't it? Or 89?
Yeah. But like,
that was a ways after.
This is like a little more mainstream than Racing with the Moon or the Cotton Club. So, you know, it's just like it's high school kids in the 80s, you know. Yeah. Right. I don't know. I mean, I'm thinking like just putting it square in the middle with like a 10.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fair. I mean, what did we end up doing Racing with the Moon?
Racing with the Moon, we gave it 7s.
Okay. Yeah, then I think 9 or 10 is fine. I think that's a reasonable place for it.
Okay, so 10 it is. So 10 on overall quality, 0 on caginess. It's just right there, kind of in the middle. It's fine, right? It's not making a big statement. There's some nudity in there. Some of it's uncomfortable.
Yeah, a lot of it is uncomfortable, yeah.
You know, and that's kind of the movie. And if you've never seen it and you've watched Sean Penn before, I think this would be a weird experience for you.
That's accurate, yeah.
All right, so let's see what movie is going to join our Wheel O Cage and replace Fast Times, and that is Matchstick Men. Men is joining the Wheel O Cage. So to find out which Nicolas Cage movie we talk about next time on the show, you'll have to watch our Wheel O Cage spin. You can go to comingofcage.com for that, or our YouTube channel, Dorico Studios, where we post all of that video content. We're, of course, all over social media on TikTok and all that good stuff. So there you have it. Ryan, anything else for Fast Times at Ridgemont High?
I'm good. I think we covered everything.
All right. Well, make sure you get that uncut release.
That's right. It is uncut. full bush, full dick, hanging dong.
All right, everybody. We're the Coming of Cage podcast. Subscribe on your podcast app of choice or to our YouTube channel. I'm Derek. That's Ryan.
See you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Coming of Cage podcast, a Dorico Studios production. We're hosted by Ryan Kucher and me, Derek Mayer. You can find all our links at comingofcage.com and subscribe to our show on your podcast app of choice. Want to see us? Subscribe to the Dorico Studios YouTube channel for video versions of the show. Keep on caging on.